Don't ask about schools, don't ask about crime. Ask about cafes and coffee shops and incoming developments and maybe some past clients' referrals, or talk to some neighbors and approach it from that point of view. And it'll get you much farther as to getting the information that you want to make a good decision on your home buying. Yeah, 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 yeah. Under all is the land, the real, real, the real estate. Courtney, your friends about to show you how to generate wealth. For yourself, add a couple notches to your belt. Under all is the land, under all is the land. The real, real, real under estate. All is the land, under all is the land. The real, real, real estate. Coming to you live from Acme Real Estate in Los Angeles, California. Welcome to Under All is the Land, Season 4, Episode 5. I am Courtney Polis, your host, here with my rock star co-stars, Silke Fernald.
Hello.
And Dominique Madden.
Hello.
Today we are going to talk about some uncomfortable subjects, which shouldn't be uncomfortable because everybody already knows it, but they just don't want to talk about it. Those things being misperceptions of crime, some unintentional bias, and how you know you're asking the wrong questions at an open house.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Mm. So first things first, how do you feel about crime in Los Angeles right now?
It's definitely up. And it is everywhere. I don't think you can be specific to specific areas. I think crime is just where, you know, it just is. And that's
yeah,
what it is.
Yeah, so it's kind of everywhere.
Living in Los Angeles means there's crime. It can happen any corner, any day, hour of the day. It's just what it is.
Yeah, we're in a dense city. Mm-hmm. In every area is pretty dense, you know. But we're also in a city where there's big differences between rich and poor, which is every city, right? Like that just is what it is. But you have easy access to people with money, with Rolexes, with designer dogs, designer cars, things that are easy to steal. You know what I mean? If you really want to steal them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just a matter of fact. But I think people are really focused on thinking that it happens in concentrated areas. And if they buy in other areas, they'll somehow avoid it.
Right,
jumping right into the real estate aspect of it.
But it is true.
Because it's people think that.
People do think that somehow also price of housing is correlated to safety, which is not always true.
Nope.
I'll give you an example. When I started selling real estate in Highland Park a decade ago, it was pretty dangerous. There was a lot of like gang activity, and it was gnarly. There were shootings, and not that that stuff doesn't still sometimes exist, but it has definitely gone way down. I have clients, however, who, you know, when they're looking outside their areas where they live or maybe really know very well and have convinced themselves are safe, then they go to a place that, like Highland Park, even right now, and they're like, oh, what's the crime like here? And I'm like, where do you currently live? And they'll say something like Culver City or Santa Monica. Mm-hmm. And I ask them, do you look at the crime rates where you are? Because especially with COVID, but not exclusively with COVID, Santa Monica, Venice, and some of these places that have very expensive real estate have been hit hard with petty crime, homelessness, and some other...
Yeah, especially homelessness. It's gotten crazy and out of control.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah.
So,
the crime is so much higher.
There's like lower crime.
But also there are less consequences to criminals. Right. So they're empowered and emboldened. Right. Like, you know, it's kind of like, go ahead, steal, because you're not going to really have a penalty.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
That's true, too. Yeah. I mean, there are consequences to these policies that we vote for. We've talked about it before. I think we have this good conscience that wants people to inherently be good, but that's not the economic reality of our city. And it's just not the reality of our city. I don't know if it ever actually was, but you know, if there's no punishment for crime, people will commit crime. They will still continue to commit crime. Like, you see people walking into, you know, there's one at the Century City Shopping Center, I think it's Westfield, and there were people just, they go in, you know, a gang of people and just rob the department store, just throwing stuff in the bag and running out. Nobody's doing anything. It's like, That happens everywhere. That happens everywhere. That's adjacent to Beverly Hills.
You see a lot of Beverly Hills restaurant robberies where people are sitting outside eating and someone comes up and takes their Rolex. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's not exclusive to any one neighborhood. Right. I think we have blinders on if we're not seeing that, you know? Right. But I also think people need to consider that when you live in any city, you risk the fact that there's going to be increased crime, you know. And I actually read a book. I think it was
Let's
called...
Let's just give a round of applause for that right there.
Yeah. I read a book.
She read a book. Okay, people.
I wish I could remember the name right now, but it was a great book about, you know, why, like, lying has become so second nature to people. Mm. And one of the things that it noted in it was that, you know, whenever communities were smaller and more tight-knit, there was more accountability, mm-hmm. you know, in the community from person to person. Because if you lied and then other people in the community found out, now you're the community liar. Mm-hmm. You know, if you stole, now you're the thief, you know? Right. But when you're in a city, there's anonymity. When you're online, there's anonymity, you know? So it's like you don't have that same obligation to be honest because...
There's no shame. Well,
exactly. You have the obligation to yourself, but that's, you know...
But that's just hoping that someone has that.
Right.
Character.
I mean, I hate to say it like this, but I also think that's where, like, a lack of God consciousness comes in, too. There were, at least, I think, at some time, there was this idea that religion... And again, I know that has been disproven, like... You know, there are many different types of religions and stuff like that. But there's an element of religion or people going to church. There's accountability and there's redemption.
Right.
So if you are a bad person, you can go and get born again. You can kind of create a new life with God or with your new self. There's a space for transformation.
Yeah. You can call that karma. Colonists,
you can call it God. I will call it karma. It's the same thing.
Yeah,
and not lying.
Okay, but hear me out for a second. I'm not trying to change your mind. What I'm saying is, not that shit didn't go down, but I'm saying there was a community space around what people conceived of as their shared values in an ethics way or in a behavior way or in a norms way that I don't think we have anymore. Mm. So now I don't feel like there's like a community center for shaming that would be in a small town, but there's also not... Everybody goes to the same church or everybody goes to the same place where you have to actually be seen, live up, and be held accountable because you're breaking some higher level rule or something.
Right, but that is something that is probably still the case in smaller villages or in smaller towns. They still have the... But even in big... I think in big cities where there's millions and millions of people, there's never the case, you know?
I don't know. I think in some places it definitely... I mean, I definitely think in America, historically, until probably recently... Mm. Church, no matter what church you're in, has been a thing. Hmm. I think these past three generations are really the ones who are breaking with that tradition. A lot of people are just not religious anymore at all. They think organized religion is ridiculous. And we rely more on Eastern philosophy. When you talk to anybody in LA, they'll talk to you about chakras, about the universe, about that. And I feel that too. I hear that. I'm not saying except a space for accountability. That's what churches used to be for people. And a space for redemption.
But I think that's arguable. Spirituality versus religion, in my opinion. Because you can be spiritual, you don't have to be religious.
All I'm saying is, we don't have something between breaking the law and just doing whatever the fuck you want that is accountable right now.
Yeah.
In our city. Where is that? It's the internet.
If anything, it's true. There's no accountability. Culture, it's true.
That's all.
It's true.
That's all we've got. It's like, am I being shamed on public media?
Yeah, that is true. It's cancel culture. That's what people are the most afraid of. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the people who are also attacked by cancel culture are sometimes on the right side of the thing, you know?
Yeah, that's true too.
You know, but it's really just about how you know, who's pumping out the agenda against that person.
Yeah. Right.
That's the thing. But yeah, I do get what you mean. There's no space for people to really be held accountable for their actions because we're all doing our own thing, focused on other things.
Our laws aren't doing anything.
Yeah.
Unless you have to hold yourself accountable. See, that's
what
I'm thinking.
But you keep going back to that. Who does that?
People don't.
Nobody does that, babes.
No, you know, but you know what the problem is? Well, one of the many problems.
But I'm saying responsible people do. But when a criminal goes into a CVS and steals a whole bunch of shit in a bag and runs out the door because they know they're not going to be get caught, they're not going home and praying to God for redemption. There's no accountability. They're not going, wow, I did something really bad.
But they also,
Would the person robbing the store be the one that prays?
No, but
I don't know.
No,
maybe exactly. They might go to church on Sunday. Right, you know, but they might. But anyway, but I see video after video of these store robberies, right? Which have shut down Bed Bath and Beyond now, Walgreens. Mm. I mean, you know, like
and big, even like Starbucks in your neighborhood.
Starbucks, like, yeah, like all of these places cannot sustain the amount of loss that they're taking on their products. Because there's no consequence. Mm-hmm. You know, you watch the videos and the security people are so disempowered from actually doing anything because they can be the person who's sued, you know, that literally, like, they're just standing there watching the person
so
steal.
So it's the law. We need to change the laws.
We need to change the laws, but we need to stop trying to pretend that everybody is good.
Right.
And that that it's just unjust to put anyone in handcuffs. Because guess what? Some people need the law laid down. Some people did not have parents who cared enough to lay the law down and make them be good people. Yeah. And those people have no conscience to be like, oh, I shouldn't steal this thing. They have wants. Yeah. They have needs. Yeah. And they feel like this is how I'm going to sustain that need.
But that's the only tool that works. Is the law.
I agree.
Because everything else is like, well, the good people would probably not do the thing. And the bad people.
But even the law
they
doesn't always
need to work.
I mean, it's a hybrid of law. Right. Like, you know, like having the laws protect people, but then also encouraging people to be better parents, you know? Like people to have, I think we have a problem of just letting anyone do anything, you know? Like,
it is an LA problem.
It is.
I will say that because I remember when I moved from LA to DC the first time, many, many years ago. I had lived in LA for like 8 years or something, and then I moved to DC for 5 years and then moved back to LA. But when I did, I was like, oh my gosh, in DC, people talk about their opinions. And they actually listen to each other and they actually have pretty intelligent conversations with one another, even people who disagree with their argument. Like I got many arguments with libertarians. Talk about prostitution with libertarians. It was a guaranteed argument. It's really fun. But you know, like you can have a consensual crime argument, you know, but then what's the public health? What's public health's responsibility if you're letting prostitution not like be of wild and free space because it's consensual crime. Is there any public responsibility for STD prevention and that kind of thing, or should people get free health care as a result of this irresponsible behavior, which can tie into all kinds of things, banning soda, you know, dietary restrictions, mandatory vaccinations, like whatever it all goes into this bucket of where does the government overstep, where do freedom and the government intersect. But I realized that I have been so limited in Los Angeles because our general public mindset, the one we share with other people, is that we don't judge about anything, including the crackheads on the metro who have been in the news a lot lately. And a lot of the places where we sell, one of the perks of it is the beautiful new metro line that's going through it. So now what the funk?
Yeah.
How come our city can't get a handle on this? Why are there so many meth heads and drug addicts on our metro system, stabbing random people, hurting each other, hurting other people?
Well, that's the question, right?
And how can this not be something that's considered an urgent, like if this fails, if the public perception of the metro is that it is not a place where people who want to be safe can go, or, you know, it's not a place for you and me, then this whole multi-billion-dollar project is failed. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole point of this was to have a modern, easy to access different parts of the city. I didn't say that right grammatically, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's because our city leadership is a failure.
Our city leadership has been a failure.
Yeah, because they're not really paying attention to the real issues. They're paying attention, or should I say, blasting things as issues that are really not the issue.
Right.
You know, because it helps line their pockets.
Right.
Let's be real about that.
Right.
You know, like shouting, homelessness is due to a lack of housing. Let's build more housing. Let's da da da.
Right.
And probably their hands are still being greased by developers.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, that's
it's
not
drugs,
the issue.
Guys.
It's drugs.
Trank.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's trank.
It's
crack. It's coke. I just saw a pokey pipe being smoked this morning. You know what I mean? Like,
every morning for
every
you.
Morning. Yeah, literally. I mean, and you can't avoid it. You can't avoid it, but if you ask people about, like, you know, the homeless problem, oh, housing.
No, right.
Guess fucking what?
Yeah.
You ask them, you know what? Actually, I encourage people to watch an Instagram page called LA Homeless, where he interviews homeless people. Like, you know, he just goes up. This feels, I mean, you know, it feels very authentic. And most of them say they have had an opportunity to be housed, mm-hmm. whether it's with family, friends, by, you know, by like offering via the, you know, like city things, you know, and but they choose not to because they don't want to be. This one woman said, you know, I've been in a cage my whole life. I don't want to be in another cage. And like, I don't want an apartment. I want to be here. I want to be free. You know, that's what they want.
Right.
That's what most of them want. And let's not like, there is an issue with, you know, mental health too.
Yeah.
And like, there are genuine situations where that is the issue.
Which comes from drugs.
Yeah. And some of it from drugs and some of it just via
mental health illness.
Hereditary issues. You know what I mean?
Well, also, but, you know, the 70s and 80s had a big movement of kind of taking down all whatever the public institutions were that handled, like sanitariums and stuff like that, that handled mental health crises because people were being mistreated and there was a lack of governmental oversight, not unlike private prisons and stuff like that. So they got rid of all these places, but they didn't make new ones. They didn't make new and better facilities, so the people are out on the street.
Right.
But I've lived in LA for a long time, 23 years, I think now, maybe more, I don't know. And in all my time, I've never seen it be so bad as this. And I've said that before, and I do think that there's an element of numbness on behalf of our city leadership. They gently talk about things, but if you want to see what's really going on, follow at Still Brazy, follow at Street People of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. At Street People of Beverly Hills, at LA Homeless.
At Street People of West Hollywood.
This is the reality. This is really what's happening in the streets. But, really, you know, dark. Just to tie that back, when we get a lot of questions, you know, we work in a lot of different neighborhoods, and, you know, sometimes people are coming into those neighborhoods from other areas and they have questions and they don't know, you know, like there's a lot of questions about crime, etc. But if you're an Angeleno, then you should know that crime exists everywhere and you have to be conscious mm-hmm. about what you're doing, where you're going. Are you riding your uniwheel at 3 a.m.? Well, guess what? It might get stolen. It doesn't matter where you are. It might get stolen. You know? Yeah, like you know, like you have to be conscious. Yeah. Or if you have a $5,000 designer dog and you do not look like a threat and you're walking it down Melrose, it might be stolen. You know?
Yeah.
Like if you're driving a G-Wagon and you leave your door unlocked, it might be stolen, mm-hmm. you know? Like, true. That is just the reality of it. So it's really about being conscious. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whenever people ask these questions, it's like, one, look at your area. What does that look like?
Right, two, that's a really good point. First, let's see how well you know your area. Go on crimemapping.com, type in your address, and see what is happening around you. Like, for real. And it goes by dates, I think, but you can, even if you just compare apples to apples, be like, in the past month, like, how many violent assaults were there, how many robberies, how much petty theft, how many cars stolen, domestic violence, whatever. Check it all out. Okay, go. Yep.
The areas that you deem as safe
mm-hmm. right.
might look a little bit more hairy than some of the areas you deem as unsafe.
So let's talk about that. Where do people's perceptions of unsafe come from? Is it hidden
racism?
Racial bias?
Yes, I do think so, yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Yes.
You don't 100%. Get the, I do not quote the question in Pasadena. Is it safer when people go into an open house?
Meanwhile, I lived in Pasadena whenever I was a little bit younger.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like gangland, honestly. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I loved Pasadena. Like, I had no problem with that. It's like, you know, just...
It was cool back then.
Yeah, it was still cool. Like, you know, I mean, look, you learn to live and just thrive because there are all different kinds of people in a city that is a melting pot like LA.
Absolutely.
But, you know, but you're blind if you don't want to look at the facts that there's crime everywhere. In Pasadena, too.
Right.
You know, in Santa Monica, too. Definitely in Venice. Like, you know.
So one of the things I wanted to focus on is what people are asking the wrong questions at open houses.
Yes.
And either they're asking the wrong question or they're asking a veiled question that is supposed to be indicative of some other question that they're really trying to get answered. I've seen all different types of people ask these kind of veiled questions because I think what they're thinking is they're moving from a wealthier place that they're renting, like a Culver City or a Santa Monica, into a place they don't understand and they don't know who to ask. And so they're asking the real estate agent, which obviously we're not allowed to answer. And by the way, we're fully aware, and because we sell in neighborhoods, we get to know the neighbors, and we're aware of how awesome the street is, and we know that the neighborhood is great and the people are amazing, and you know, we're here for that, you know.
But and also, like, no, you know, like, there are obviously neighborhoods that are historically one demographic or another,
right?
But you know, the reality now in 2023 is that the neighborhoods are melting pots. You know, like, there might be more of one demographic than another, but there is also a melting pot of people. Like, you know, like, for example, you know, we work a lot in Leimert Park, and you know, I have clients of literally all races, you know, right. who have bought and thrived and flourished
and
in
Leimert
Park and love it, you know. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't stop the questions from people, even though they see, you know, two kids riding their bicycle down the street with their parents trailing behind, or like, you know, the garden tour that happens every year,
right.
which neighbors feel comfortable enough to open their doors to strangers, to show them their gardens, you know, mm-hmm. that should speak to the integrity of a neighborhood.
Right. I think that there's more community accountability, yeah. more like people know each other on the street kind of thing, and people have lived there for a very long time, so you get like a longer scope. There's no problem with wanting to get to know a new neighborhood, but what you're asking when you come into an open house should be, do you have any neighbors I could chat with or something? You mm-hmm. like maybe get to know people who actually live there. Humanize your questions, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. for us as real estate agents, A, we can see through it, but B, mm-hmm. it's not legit. Like, based on the actual science and the data, you're coming in with a bias that we can't endorse.
Yeah. And it's also impossible to answer. Because what if something happens? What if there's a break-in and we told you, fine, it's safe here. What in the world? It could happen anywhere.
It's not that we could say any place anywhere. In LA is safe, you right? Know? People get robbed in the Bourbon Street.
Yeah, people get robbed in West Hollywood
all the time. There's a lot, it's not that.
It's that street people in West Hollywood.
I'm saying, maybe it's not really crime that is the question.
Right.
That's probably the thing, is that crime is being used just like schools are used.
Right. Mm-hmm. As a veiled question.
Yeah. And so it's like you're asking the wrong questions. The school information is online. So you can go to greatschools.net or you can go to niche.com. Or again, you can ask people or go and visit the school for yourself. Right. Sit in on a class if they'll let you. Talk to the administration. Like, do some digging. Not every school is right for every kid. Just because it's 10 out of 10 on great schools doesn't mean it's right for your kid either.
Right.
But when you're asking about quality of schools, especially in LA, sometimes the rating is based on test scores that are brought down by English as a second language students. So what you're seeing, if you actually went to the school, is there's kind of like a division between people who are recent immigrants and how they test and how they learn differently, obviously, because it's in a different language, and native English speaking kids. Like, there's a divide. So you have to know the school too to be able to really even break down the data. Take a chance. Like, in Highland Park, there was a school that was that actually really became a very desirable school because it had a language immersion program at the end of it all. It was kind of like this beautiful hybrid of English as a second language students plus English as a first language wanting to learn Spanish. Like, it was like this beautiful like hybrid. It ended up becoming a very highly rated school. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are changes always happening. But, you know, coming in and asking a real estate agent how the schools are, for me, it always looks a little fishy.
Yeah, but I also would be interested to know, like, the long-term success of the people who attend, like, private schools versus public schools. Because one thing that whenever I was talking to someone at one of my open houses that they made a point of is that, you know, people talk down public schools a lot. But what they failed to, like, also consider about it is that there's more diversity, usually. And there is a benefit to that. For kids, you know? And I there is a public school that is very well regarded, actually, that a lot of people buy into the neighborhood for. And, you know, even that, you know, like people are literally buying for that school. But that school isn't one size fits all either.
We're prevented from saying certain things or even really having honest conversations in this kind of cultural climate when some conversations really do need to be had. And then instead we're doing these peripheral things that I think are actually kind of pointless, like banning love letters or whatever, discouraging love letters when if somebody wants to discriminate against a potential buyer, which they rarely do in my world because it's all about the money, but you know, they could just Google the person. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like so ridiculous to think that somebody writing a letter about their emotional commitment to a home would create a bias that would not be more, that would be more powerful than the dollars that they're willing to pay for it.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not really buying that, not from my experience. But so we do these sidetracky kind of things instead of hitting the problems like head on.
We heard from a reliable source who is a parent at the school that, you know, that there was a child who was called the N-word, you know, by other kids. And there was no penalty. Even after that was reported, even after the mom tried to pursue anything happening about it, no penalty. Mm-hmm. You know, so that kid now has to be uncomfortable going to that school because they know that that kind of abuse is
tolerated.
Welcomed. Yeah. And that's like, even though that school is highly rated and regarded, guess what? If I was a parent, my kid wouldn't be going to that school.
Right.
Because I know my kid could suffer long term from whatever they're dealing with in that school. So that tells you, you know, you really have to like make a personal decision when you're shopping schools.
Right.
And
it's
instead
so
of
personal.
Looking at ratings, look at like their, you know, their like what they're actually teaching. One, because you had the incident where you went to a school who didn't even teach people how to read.
Yeah, that was really unfortunate.
That
was
crazy.
It was the Oaks.
Yeah, a different kind
of
school.
And you know, but the reason why I love the Oaks is because, well, why I thought it would be good is because Nikos was really gifted in math, like grades above where he was supposed to be. And I went to the administration and I said, do you feel like you could cater just this part? Like, he's on track with the other things, but he's super highly gifted in this other thing. Like, can you accommodate that? Now, I was also a gifted kid and I loved learning at a higher level. It was actually what probably kept me out of trouble when I was younger, you know? And so I see it as a possibility for education. I know it exists. And so I was searching for that for him. Mm-hmm. And they gave me yes, yes, yes. And it's like pretty expensive, you know? And then in that year, I mean, there were misspellings. The teacher was misspelling words, like spelled violet with two T's.
Very crunchy,
you know,
that school.
So crunchy.
Yeah.
I realized that, well, this is just my personal assessment, okay? This is just my personal assessment, is that some private schools are about who you meet, like who the other parents are. In LA, it's about kind of like the networking or teaching your kid to be a global citizen or something, like teaching your kid rules of... it's trying to teach kids to be good people who you know are going to have a trust fund that is, they probably don't, they're going to need to learn the charity piece because the financial piece is already done. Literacy is not going to be their number one thing. So they literally,
that's interesting.
Like, I know, isn't that weird?
Training future philanthropists? Is that what that is?
Sort of. I think it's like it's like future rich kids in the making kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you... diminishing privilege or something. It's like all the kids in there are so privileged that this school's responsibility now is to kind of like try to bring them back to not being
reality.
Spoiled brats or something. As opposed to what most schools for is like educating or teaching to read or whatever. But I mean, listen, public schools have their big problems too. There are definitely agendas and there are definitely like things that don't work for everybody. And It's a messy thing to talk about schools as if one size fits all. That's what the bottom line about all of this is. So even perceptions about highly rated schools cannot be a right fit for your kid. Perceptions about excellent private schools might not be a right fit for your kid. That's what I learned. We went back to public school and had a great time. But it was a great school in Wonderland. It was amazing. But you know, I mean, there are all different types of choices you can make. So in sum, if you're asking the wrong questions, if this is about how to know when you are asking the wrong questions, one of the wrong questions to ask the real estate agent is, how are the schools? And I think it's actually really a bad answer for it. Like, it's a bad answer for an agent to give, even unless it's their personal experience with a school that they can personally attest to. But I just don't think it's an area that they should talk about because it can be veiled also, and you don't want to be seen as giving into that either.
Totally.
So, neighborhood misperceptions. I feel like there are some streets that have bad reputations historically in LA, and the reasons people give when they walk into the open houses or like when I do follow up about not, well, I'll give you an example. I was selling a house that was two blocks off of Crenshaw, and people were saying it's too close to Crenshaw. I'm like, how can this be too close to Crenshaw? It's two blocks off of Crenshaw. You would never say a house is too close to Sunset if it was two whole city blocks off of Sunset. You know, which is a very busy street. And it's because Crenshaw, you know, got famous in the 90s, I think.
That's a bad reputation.
Had a bad reputation. But in fact, it's actually flourishing right now. I think, you know, it's had a lot of transformation and it continues to have money poured into it. And there's a lot of activism in the neighborhoods too, like our friend Akil and his partner doing developments on Crenshaw and, you know, improving stuff. It's just,
There's people just don't know it's the name. If you would rename that something else.
Right.
That will never happen.
Of course it won't happen. But if it was, nobody would be, this is too close to whatever.
Yeah. It's a busy street.
They wouldn't drive down it and think, have an issue with it. Yeah.
And most of the time people like want to go somewhere where you can walk to this or there is something to even drive to that's close by, like shopping or CVS.
Isabel Street used to have that in Mount Washington.
Yeah.
Isabel used had to a reputation. Have the reputation because of that whole thing that happened at the end of the street, right? Like back in the day.
There was a lot of gang activity on that street.
Yeah.
I mean, look, every neighborhood has these little parts that have had some historical thing happen.
Atwater used to have crime.
Atwater and Glatwater, the place between
Glatwater. An old friend of mine had
Park
somebody shot in front of her house in Atwater, in one of the cute streets that now the house would probably be like $1.6 million.
Oh. I mean,
little one.
I was holding an open house and there was a murder-suicide at the end of the street.
Yes, I remember that.
I was
that.
Like, where was that?
In Atwater.
That was like in Atwater like 3 years ago. And it was an isolated incident, so there's that. But, you know, but it was a thing. And
right
it was,
at the open Sunday.
Yeah.
Police, you couldn't get your out.
You can't make this stuff up. That's
but there,
for sure.
There you go. They used to do crime in LA.
Right. Well, yeah. Okay. So to get back to
it. Can strike at any time.
It certainly can. So I, what, so, okay. So wrong questions to ask. How are the schools? What is the crime like? Well, I had a buyer ask me this question while, and I'm selling them a house in Brentwood. And he said, like, can you tell me about, and it's an honest, it's an innocent question. So I hope, you know, it's no harm intended, but it was, he was like, can you tell me about like what people's jobs are around here? What like the average salary
is?
And I'm like, I have no
Google idea.
Yeah.
Google can help
no
you.
No idea.
That is such a weird question.
Yeah. This is Brentwood?
Brentwood, yeah. And I said, just based on real estate prices, it feels like it's a move up neighborhood, you know? Just based on the prices, it feels like yeah. you know, you can go way higher and these, you know, there are higher price points.
Right.
It feels like a move up buy.
Right.
Kind of price point wise. So that's what I could speak to. But, you know, definitely anything demographic we cannot answer.
Yeah. So or safety related.
Or safety related. Yeah. What are the right questions to ask?
Oh, another wrong question.
Oh, you have another
wrong one?
Why is the seller selling? That's such a bad question. I think we've talked about that before.
Yes,
nobody's ever
to
going
good
to
questions.
Nobody's
no
ever going
tell
to tell you.
You
something that compromises
messy divorce. Let me tell you, messy divorce.
They hate each other. Totally, just want to offload it. Would sell it for $400,000.
Right, complete distress sale. Looking desperately for an offer. Yeah, no agent's going to actually tell you the real answer to that. I cringe when my buyers ask the listing agents that. I just cringe because sometimes like we'll be doing a tour that's agent accompanied.
You're like behind them going.
Or like, sorry. Right. Oh my gosh.
The other one.
I get so embarrassed.
Yeah.
For what did they spend on the reno?
Oh my God.
I hate that question.
Yeah. Terrible.
What? They're not telling us that.
I really don't know. And I don't want to know.
Right.
Yeah.
Does it matter how much they spend? Will it make the house be more valuable to you now that you know they spend $500 versus $200?
Right.
No. Because sometimes when you tell people that, they think, oh, well, I don't want to make this person
this much money.
$200,000 in profit.
But what they're not considering is the time. Which the energy, the anger, you know, like all
the
of the things
cost.
That go into actually getting to the end of a renovation, you know, the holding costs, which, you know, with hard money are 10%, you know, but
it's
like
crazy,
at least
expensive.
10%, maybe even 15. I've seen that, you know, like it's expensive. Yeah. So there's, you know, it's not like people are just going to invest in renovating a house to even out or take a loss.
Right.
You know, they need to make a profit, but you're not. You counting their pockets isn't going to do anything for you. It's not going to get you the house.
Right, totally. Right question.
I think a right question would be like, what could you know if there are any like community groups or activities around here? Because like, for example, I have a friend that I used to work out with in West Hollywood who lives in Leimert Park and he's part of the Leimert Park Runners Club. Mm-hmm. And so like, there's a runners club. Like people get together and like jog around the block. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But that sounds kind of cool.
Another right question, like what are the stores that are, what's close by? What are the
stores,
restaurants? What are the stores? Is there any cool development coming in?
Yeah.
Tell me about the overall vibe here for people that are new to the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that is something.
Parks nearby.
Mm-hmm. Any upcoming developments?
Yeah. Yep. I think those are all good questions. So, yeah, I also think like, are there any neighbors or any past clients that you had that, like when I was selling that one property in Baldwin Hills, there was another Acme client that I had sold a house to, came into my first open, was like, if anybody wants to know about the neighborhood, just have them call me. We love it here. And I was like, that's good. So there were a couple people who asked about it. And I said, you know, I have a past client who just moved in to the neighborhood about a year ago and absolutely loves it. So I can share that with you, you know? So I definitely think that like client testimonials or past client experiences or something can be useful there. You know, or talking to neighbors, like again, talking to neighbors, I think can be good, you know, as long as you're open to, you know, there's a danger in talking to neighbors too, because then they might be like, oh, they might disclose something that is completely not true, or, you know, there could be some old beef with this owner and they're trying to sabotage the deal. I don't know. There's probably a risk there too. But I think if you talk to enough people, you'll get a sense of how it is. Or go to a local coffee shop, or go to somewhere in the neighborhood and like hang out for a minute. Like, what would be your local spot?
Walk See up how and you down feel. The streets, chat with the neighbors that walk by. Yeah. The best right. thing is when people come to the open house and there's other people that are just moved in and they come to look, because they always like to look at the design and take ideas, da da da. And then people ask, what's this area all about? And then they jump in. We yeah. just moved here, da 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 da. We've got everybody's phone numbers. We love it. And that's the yeah. best part, when they yeah. hear from the buyer.
Right.
It gives that extra, or from neighbors. It gives almost like that extra legitimacy.
Well, it's not
that
real,
I wouldn't, I'm obviously,
I know, don't live in the neighborhood.
Exactly. But I also, like, we are maybe more like, well, they're trying to sell the house, of course they're going to say all the right things, you know. But
right, right.
hearing maybe it from an actual agent. Neighbor being, that's the perfect thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right.
They have
right.
no, you know, they don't lie.
Right. All then. So yeah, there. Right. So again, to summarize, don't ask about schools. Don't ask about crime. Ask about cafes and coffee shops and incoming developments, and maybe some past clients' referrals, or talk to some neighbors and approach it from that point of view. And it'll get you much farther as to getting the information that you want to make a good decision on your home buying. That's all I got. See you next time on Under All Is the Land. Under all is the land. Under all is the land.